I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
So a lot of how they react to things on multiple fronts, in my view, is drawn from this deep-seated resentment that they can't be who they are. And so if they can't be who they are, you won't be either. I feel like that's the same reason women in that movement are so opposed to abortion. Have had babies they did not want and have been raped. But, you know, rape doesn't happen in Christian nationalist marriages. That doesn't happen. It's a man's right to have sex whenever he wants it.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to Freedom Over Fascism. One of the most important things on the national stage right now is Project 2025, which, as you know, is a blueprint for what will happen if Trump or another Republican wins the presidency. Its primary sponsor is the Heritage Foundation, but a wide range of right-wing authoritarian organizations have contributed to it. We've talked about it before. This is a plan of action to give Donald Trump the power and the loyalists to form a dictatorship from day one. What we haven't talked about much is how closely Project 2025 is linked to Christian nationalism. If you want to hear more about white Christian nationalism, particularly the independent charismatic movement, please go back and listen to episode 46, where I interviewed Dr. Matt Taylor, who tells us about how close Christian supremacists are to Trump and how involved they were in January 6th. Prepare to have your mind blown into little tiny pieces. Today, I talked to Andrew Watkins, who is a New York Times bestselling author and writer of the Substack newsletter, How Project 2025 Will Ruin Your Life. Andrew grew up in the Christian evangelical community, and she talks about the blatant Christian nationalism found throughout the Project 2025 plan. Our conversation focused on the code switching that Christian nationalists use to say one thing to people outside their movement, but are crystal clear to those who know the lingo. Andra decodes this language in the Project 2025 document, and she gives us a behind-the-scenes look at the underlying belief system behind Project 2025. Over the next several months, we'll continue to discuss Christian nationalism and its links to the Trump campaign and the GOP as a whole. Remember, the belief that the United States is a Christian nation and that Trump is its savior is central to this ideology. And Christian nationalist notions of morality have been a big part of the MAGA agenda, which they've implemented in the states where they have a supermajority. This includes all the anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ+ legislation, abortion bans, book bans, the gutting of public education, the loosening of child labor laws, the attempt to ban contraception, and the attempt to ban mifepristone all across the country. Take a listen to Andra decoding some of this language in Project 2025 and in MAGA legislation throughout the country. Also, if you like what you hear on this podcast, please leave a review. I also encourage you to sign up for a paid subscription to the Freedom Over Fascism Substack, which is now found at the URL www.freedomoverfascism.us. Remember, our job is to talk to friends and neighbors outside our bubbles about what Trump and Republicans plan to do to all of us if they take national power and continue accruing more power at the state and local level. We'll continue to talk with organizers, funders, activists, and public officials about how we all can contribute to the effort to save democracy and help freedom win over fascism. Andra Watkins, welcome to Freedom Over Fascism.
Thanks for having me.
So I am so glad you're here because you've been writing a Substack called How Project 2025 Will Ruin Your Life. And I've been talking a little bit about it without getting into great depth. And I've also just started diving into Christian nationalism and Christian supremacy even. And I would love for you to take us through what you write about. What is Project 2025? What is it going to do? And how does that intersect Christian nationalism?
going to answer the latter part of your question first. I grew up in Christian nationalism. For 13 years, I attended a church school that was affiliated with one of the founding churches of the Moral Majority Movement, which was Jerry Falwell Sr.'s movement in the late 70s, early 80s. And so I was indoctrinated in Christian nationalism. A lot of the things they say now are things that I was hearing when I was 8 in a pew in South Carolina, where I grew up. I deprogrammed all of that. It took about 20 years in therapy and lots of mistakes. And then I started hearing about this thing called Project 2025. And last September, I picked it up and started reading it. It is 920 pages long, more or less. It took me a while. It's not designed to be read. It's designed to discourage reading, to discourage a deep dive. But I became more and more and more alarmed as I saw the mainstream media start talking about it compared to what I was reading in it. Because I would read a paragraph and be like, these are Bible verses they're quoting that I learned when I was a kid. They don't have the verse referenced, but this is Bible language. And why isn't anybody talking about that? You know? And so the more I read it, the more I decided this is a Christo-fascist manifesto for transforming the United States into a theocracy based on Christian nationalism. That's how I talk about it. So in my Substack, I dissect little bits of it and we jump around between parts. I don't go through it in order because some people are more interested in the culture thing. Some people are more interested in economic things and tax things. So I try to jump around weekly and give people different flavors of what's in it, but always with the eye toward what their Christo-fascist goal is for controlling us and transforming the country into this Christian nation they insist we are.
A couple of weeks ago, I had on a scholar of New Apostolic Reformation Christians and Independent Charismatic Christian. And he was talking about a lot of symbolism that's really aimed at an evangelical or charismatic Christian audience, but that kind of goes above the head of a lot of other folks. So do you think that's part of it?
Well, in Christian nationalism, and all of those groups are part of that, you're taught that you live in the world, but you're not supposed to be of the world. That's a little bit of evangelicalese for your listeners. That's the language that I say they speak. And so I learned that language as a child. So you're supposed to be in the world, but not of the world. So you can't dress like everybody else. You can't go to the same places everybody else does. You can't talk like everybody else. So you have this unique language that you speak where things don't mean to you what they would mean to me because I know that language. So taking Project 2025 apart that way, and I even do that with news headlines. So there are multiple examples in the media every day of times where these Christian nationalist politicians say things that mean something different to you than they mean to them. I started out my Substack talking about pornography because on the 13th page of Project 2025, they say pornographers should be jailed. All pornography should be outlawed. People who sell it need to go to jail. People who consume it need to be punished. Any educators who consume pornography or give it to children need to be registered sex offenders. It was a very strong paragraph that literally no one has talked about. And I started pointing out to people, most liberals would speed bump over that and go, well, Pornhub is bad, I guess, or they might come after my Pornhub or my dirty pictures online or whatever. But that's not even remotely what they're talking about. Everything is pornography to them. My smut romance novels that I love to read are pornography to them. Yeah, I mean, most art is pornography to them. You know, a nude painting is pornography. We've had a school in Florida take out pictures of Michelangelo's David because, you know, he's a naked statue and that's pornography. But they go so much further than that.
Right.
No arts education whatsoever when I was a child because it was all pornography and naked people and perversion. And so you can't learn about it. So they would go much further in what they call pornography and locking people up for it than most reasonable people would. But if you don't know that, a statement like that would just speed bump right along and you'd go on with your day.
Well, I think we're seeing more of it when, you know, some of these library wars are happening with the Moms for Hitler coming in and telling libraries what they can't have on the shelf and calling what we would call sex ed books pornography and even, you know, animated characters if they're naked pornography. I always thought when I would hear about Christians talking about pornography that, wow, they're really focused on pornography. It doesn't seem to be a huge problem with the rest of the world, but they're really damn focused on pornography. But hearing you say it means everything, more or less.
Well, you know, they would create a society where most of us are pornographers. I've written a novel with a sex scene in it. They would consider that to be pornography. Sex between people who aren't married, physical contact between people who aren't married. Mike Johnson's on the record calling homosexuality pornography. There's so much within their definition of pornography that most reasonable people don't consider pornography. But if they win in November, they will redefine pornography as they see it nationwide. Right.
And you get back to the Comstock Act, and then everything gets there.
Wow.
So what are some other things, just as you think about it, that are coded in a way that you understand it and I don't?
There was an interview with Governor Tate Reeves, Mississippi, right after the Dobbs decision, where a reporter pushed him, you know, you're going to force women to have children they can't afford to have, they're not prepared to have, they don't want, you know, you're not giving them any safety net. What are you going to do as a state to help these women and these babies? And he says, well, of course we're going to help them. Of course we are. And I almost hyperventilated because I knew what he meant by that. He meant the state would set up homes for these people and the women would have to go to Bible studies to earn diapers. And they would have to go to church services to have a roof over their head or get clothing or get food certificates or whatever. They would have to meet with unlicensed counselors who were just people from churches who came in and read the Bible and prayed with them. Because that's what counseling is to Christian nationalists. They don't believe in real counseling. Everything can be solved by reading the Bible and praying. And if it can't, then there's something wrong with you. And you just don't have the right attitude. So that's what he meant when he said that. But if you didn't know that, it would just go right over your head.
Okay, this is more fascinating to me than I had any idea it would be. I think I've been missing half of, I mean, it's code switching is what it is.
It's doublespeak.
Right.
Like from 1984.
So much of 1984 is coming true. I can't even believe it. But so, okay, let's talk about this code switching. What else do we need to know? You know,
we
liberals from wherever we are in the country who are maybe you are not or religious, not Christian, just kind of going through life.
Okay. The Missouri senator who said forced birth can be the greatest healing agent when he voted against having rape and incest exceptions in the state's abortion. It's forced birth can be the greatest healing agent. And liberals lost their minds. What a cruel thing to say. And I said, y'all, it's so much more than that. You know, what he's really saying is this woman is being judged by God with this baby for some kind of sin in her life that maybe is hidden. And so this is showing it to everyone, and he's trying to get her attention about it. And if she'll just accept his judgment and have this baby, this could be one of the greatest healing agents for her relationship with God. Because God doesn't make mistakes. You know, God gave her that baby for a reason. And it's not up to her to question his reason. You know, and besides, there are consequences if she was, you know, this is just a consequence that God's giving her, and she should accept it because God knows best. That's what he's saying when he says forced birth can be the greatest healing agent. So it's even more infuriating when you know what he means.
I've heard the God doesn't make mistakes line a lot. And, you know, then played out, it means something very different than what I would assume it means, because I take the exact opposite view. So how is that used as an explanation and a cudgel proof of
outside? Well, they love to say that about transgender people, don't they? God doesn't make mistakes. Project 2025 hammers over and over and over again that there is binary sex. It's male and female. And they believe that, even though it doesn't say this in Project 2025, but they believe that because God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. That's why they believe homosexuality is wrong. That's why they believe there are only two sexes, male and female, because God created Adam and Eve. They disregard the number of people every year who are born intersex or with nebulous, you know, we don't really know which one they are when they're born. There are a lot of those, but they disregard all that. There's only male or female because God created Adam and Eve. And so therefore, that's all we can have. God doesn't make mistakes. If God made you a man, then he meant for you to be a man. And how dare you question God and say you're not a man? Because God gave you, God made you a man. So, and he doesn't make mistakes. So it sounds maybe kinder when they say, well, God doesn't make mistakes, but really it's God made you who you are and you should just accept it because he's right and he's God and you're wrong and you're not to question God.
So many things to unpack there. So let's talk about transgender rights, which is where they're starting with the laws at this point against transgender, first children, now adults. Beyond the God doesn't make mistakes, what are they so scared of?
If you grow up in a world like that, you are constantly told that your very human urges are wrong. And I have a post on this on my Substack called Christian Nationalists and Their Urges. That would be a great read for everyone. You're taught that all of your urges are wrong. They call it sin. I call it your urges. So you have an urge to go somewhere you're not supposed to go. That's wrong. You have an urge because you're attracted to someone who's the same sex as you. Well, that's wrong. It's a wrong urge. You have an urge to lust after your coworker when you're married. That's wrong. So you're constantly hammered from the pulpit and from Sunday school and in the school that I grew up in also every day almost with how practically everything you want to do and every urge that you have is wrong. And you constantly have to fight these urges. So imagine that you're gay and you know you're gay, but you've grown up in this world where you can't be gay. You can't say that. It's wrong. It's a wrong urge. You weren't born that way. You chose to be that way, and it's the wrong urge, and you have to deny that urge. But you see people out in society marrying one another when they're gay and being happy and having productive lives, and how dare they? How dare they hold hands in front of you on the sidewalk when you can't do that? How dare they be able to get married and have health insurance and the same rights as you have with your wife, even though you don't want to be married to her because you're not attracted to her, but you have to be because, you know, your urges are wrong. So a lot of how they react to things on multiple fronts, in my view, is drawn from this deep-seated resentment that they can't be who they are. And so if they can't be who they are, you won't be either. I feel like it's the same reason women in that movement are so opposed to abortion.
because
so many of them have had babies they did not want and have been raped. But, you know, rape doesn't happen in Christian nationalist marriages. That doesn't happen. It's a man's right to have sex whenever he wants it. So if the woman doesn't want it, too bad.
Right.
They don't believe rape happens. So I don't know how many women in that world have had babies they didn't want. And then they see other women getting to make different choices. And how resentful and how envious and how angry. And those are big emotions.
Right.
That we don't even acknowledge that are there, that are driving this. I'm going to make sure that you can't have choices because I don't have them.
That's striking. And it also striking, I guess it's interwoven with control and power, which ultimately leads to if I can't have an abortion, you can't either. If I can't be attracted to my best friend, you can't either. But then it goes from that to this Project 2025 manifesto that includes all areas of life where they exert control over everybody and everything. Is that a straight line, or is it all based in the controlling need of the leaders, men of these religions and communities to control the people around them? Or am I missing something?
Nationalists are taught, and I was taught this when I was a child. It's part of the indoctrination. Christian nationalists are taught that the Bible is God's law. The Bible is God's perfect law. And so any law that man writes that conflicts with God's law, even though you can read the same verse and 20 people can say it says 20 different things or means 20 different things, but that doesn't matter to them. What it means to them is the truth.
Right.
If you disagree with them, you're just delusional. So even though you can read the same verse.
Right.
So they believe that any law that man passes that conflicts with their interpretation of God's law is a wrong law. And they are charged by God to change those laws to make them equal to their interpretation of God's law. We've seen that play out with abortion. They believe abortion is murder. They believe the Bible says that it doesn't, but they believe it does. So that is them forcing our laws to match their interpretation of God's law.
Longtime listeners will know I did not grow up in this environment. And so
here,
I can, you know, make all the arguments I want, but it doesn't matter. What matters is what they want to achieve and can achieve if they get enough power. So what other ways can what's in Project 2025 ruin our lives, or what else are we missing?
Well, they have a lot of culture war stuff in there regarding abortion, but not just abortion. I mean, they want to ban all contraception. And so, you know, their goal really is, and at one point they state that the man is the breadwinner and the woman should, you know, be at home. And that's their worldview. The woman should be at home having babies. And if women want to do that, that's great. I'm not condemning that. But that is their worldview, and the man should be the breadwinner. They want to do away with not just no-fault divorce. That's where they're starting. They do away with all divorce. Because marriage in the Christian nationalist movement is a covenant, a holy covenant between God, the man, and the unrelated woman. There is no same-sex marriage. There is no divorce. There is no, oops, I made a mistake. There is no, he's abusive. If he's abusive, it's because you're not being the right kind of wife for him. And you need to work on your attitude and be the good Christian wife that he needs. So no-fault divorce is where they're starting, but that's not where they'll end if they gain control.
What else is not what it appears? It's where they're starting, but not where they ultimately want to go.
I have written all this week about education because I believe from what I've read that their goal is to turn all education in the United States into Christian nationalist religious indoctrination. And they use the term any lawful education purpose so much in the education section that states ought to be able to use money from the federal government to put toward education for any lawful education purpose. They can define it any way they want to, but we see how that's starting to play out in a state like Florida or in states where they've taken taxpayer dollars and let people send their kids to Christian school and pay for it with vouchers. You know, Texas's whole voucher program that Governor Abbott is fighting for so hard is that.
Right.
You know, if we can take these monies and then put them toward charter schools and Christian schools and private education, then that's the only choice people are going to have. And then we can say, you can't be gay. We can't have parents here who are gay. We can't have transgender kids. We can't have history taught the right way. We're going to teach that Black people were happy on the plantation, like I learned in South Carolina when I was a kid. And we're going to teach that this was a white Christian nation and the founders were all Christians, like I learned when I was a kid. And we're going to teach creation as science, because we're not going to teach children that they came from monkeys. We're not going to do that. And we're going to teach people about the flood, and we're going to make them do Bible classes every day, and we're going to make them pray, and we're going to, that's what they're going to do with education.
Right.
No, they actually use very strong language in multiple sections of this document that I interpret to mean, if a blue state doesn't go along with the directive to make funds available for this purpose and do it the way we say, then we will not give you any federal money at all. If California says we protected the right to an abortion in our Constitution, and we're going to continue to protect that, and the federal government says, okay, fine, we've told you that abortion is illegal nationwide, and you can't do that anymore, so we're not giving you any federal funds until you outlaw abortion in your state. In 2020, California took $116 billion from the federal government. They took more money than any other state. So the state would be decimated if they did that. And that's exactly what they're going to do to blue states who defy them on anything.
Right. And although a lot of states right now, which I typically refer to as MAGA captured or power building states, they've already implemented a lot of this stuff.
This has been an attack on multiple fronts. In multiple red states are already living in a precursor to the nation that Project 2025 would create for us. It's early days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they already are. So when people say they haven't heard of Project 2025, I ask them, have you heard of abortion bans? Have you heard of the IVF decision in Alabama? Have you heard about the border squabble that Governor Abbott's having with the federal government down in Texas? Have you heard of book bans? Have you heard of trans bans? Have you heard that a town in Tennessee outlawed all LGBTQ displays of affection in public? Have you heard of those? That's all from Project 2025. So, you know, there are multiple cases that are going before the Supreme Court that are policy positions in Project 2025. So it isn't just that they wrote Project 2025. They've been implementing it by using the judiciary, by using a corrupt Supreme Court, by using captured red state houses and governorships, by using gerrymandering. They've been working toward this for a while. I mean, they wrote the first version of what Project 2025 is in 1979, and Ronald Reagan's administration implemented about half of it. And so every 4 years, they put out another one for the next presidential cycle. So Republican presidents would implement some more of it. But every time they get some of their stuff implemented, they go further to the right with their next wish list or set of policy positions that they wanted to get implemented. So they've been chipping away at this for 40 something years.
Right. I mean, that's kind of the point I was making, is that they they were being very planful.
Yeah.
You know, while the other side was playing, you know, regular politics, they were playing a different game, not game entirely. They're pretty ruthless. Right. I was just listening to another podcast where they were talking about how the media environment and the power structure and how these outside organizations like the Federal Society and the churches, and it's all intertwined to eventually get to the same end. And it's less transactional than to say San Alito is taking money from A. Leonard Leo. And it's more about the fact that the Federalist Society created these people and got them into the judiciary in the first place. Mm-hmm. And now that investment paying off.
Mm-hmm.
Where the transactional kind of stuff is kind of just cherry on the top. But that was really insightful.
I've said this to several people, and I'll say it to you. You're outside of this community, so this will probably surprise you. But Sam Alito thinks Mike Johnson is going to hell because his faith is wrong. Sam Alito is a devout Catholic. He's Opus Dei. Catholicism is the truth. Only Catholics are going to heaven. Mike Johnson is a Baptist from Louisiana, and he believes Sam Alito is going to hell. I mean, growing up, my pastor constantly hammered Catholics. They were all going to hell. They were the worst. They believed the wrong faith. Their faith was wrong. So, yes, they've worked together for all this time. But if they ever gain power, it's going to be like the Shia Muslims and the Sunni Muslims fighting over whose faith is going to be the one true faith.
Right. And that's nothing new in Christianity by a long shot.
No, they've made this alliance for their own purposes to gain power. But then once they gain power, they're going to fight over who's going to have the real power. So, and whose faith's going to be the truth.
I grew up in a very evangelical area of Southern California. And I can't tell you how many times my friends told me that I was going to hell. And I'm like, I'm 16. They're like, no, you're not Christian. Sorry, you're done.
Yeah, no. And that's another way they talk. It's they're taught. I mean, I was taught to talk to people that way and to shun people who weren't, you know, because they might tempt me to be worldly. And in that world, being worldly was not being well traveled. It was not being cosmopolitan. It was being sinful and perverse. That's what being worldly was. It was an insult.
So we've gone through a couple of things here, and you told us a little bit about the coded language. If you're talking to our listeners who are activists, many of whom are in red states, what would you say that they can do to fight this or help people understand it or even just raise the awareness?
For activists in red states, I believe understanding how much of Project 2025 is already being implemented in their states and being able to point to concrete things instead of talking about this nebulous policy document. Because Project 2025 is a policy document. It's very wonkish. It's very difficult to read. But they also have a secret tactical document that they have not published online. And we can see what's in it by what they do and what they go after. So there are, I think, 484 anti-LGBTQ laws being proposed right now. They're at some stage of proposal or in process in the United States. And you can go on the ACLU's website and see where they are. And so if you're an activist and you're in one of these states, you can use that information within those communities to say, this is Project 2025 in action. The wording of some of these bills is even the same words that they use in Project 2025 to talk about these things. So that's one tool that they could use to talk about that. The IVF decision in Alabama was really a gift. If Democrats and Democrat activists know how to use it, because they do intend to ban IVF. They do believe and state over and over and over again in Project 2025 that life begins at fertilization, and they are going to protect life from fertilization to natural death. So if you live in a state that allows death with dignity, they're coming after that too. I mean, they want people, and people are embryos and petri dishes to them, and they're going to save all of them. So that a judge was willing to put that out there and cause so much outrage should be a wake-up call that more of these people feel that way. If they win, they will outlaw it nationwide, and nobody will be able to get IVF treatment for infertility. And that's by design, because IVF has allowed women to delay childbirth. IVF has allowed women to get educations and get master's degrees and PhDs and study to be doctors. And, you know, it's allowed women that those opportunities and that flexibility, and they don't want that for women. So removing that option means you either have to decide, I'm going to have a baby when I'm younger because I have a better chance, or maybe I won't have one at all. They're also coming after single parents and same-sex parents. They believe marriage is between one man and one unrelated woman, and that is it. They do not believe, and they state in Project 2025 that boyfriends living in the home, unmarried people living together with children, same-sex partners, they cite some bonker study that it's all just abuse to the children, blah, blah, blah. You know, they want to force people to stay together when they don't want to be together, when they're unhappy. They want to force women to be with men. The whole Washington Post op-ed that was written was several months ago that caused so much outrage about Gen Z girls who were too picky and didn't want to be with these racist, horrible Gen Z boys. And they should lower their standards. The girls should. You know, that was essentially the op-ed. And, you know, and this is an active thing to try to make that happen, to try to force women to make decisions that they don't want to make and stay in situations that aren't good for them and not be able to get away from them. And that's happening in multiple red states too already. So activists in red states can look for those programs. In South Carolina, there are so many examples of what I talked about with the governor of Mississippi and forcing people into religious indoctrination for essentially welfare, which is another thing they will do. They will transform all welfare into that kind of system where you will have to check boxes on your religious indoctrination card to earn your help. If you look at a lot of those types of places in the South, they're already like that, where you have those kinds of requirements for homeless shelters, food pantries, et cetera.
And yeah, Jess Piper talks a lot about the voucher program and the child labor laws being loosened, being not disconnected from each other.
For sure.
You know, if we're going to decimate public education, then those kids should be working unless they're going to get the education we want them.
Well, and that's another attitude that they have. You know, people need to be working because they can't get into trouble. They can't give in to their urges when they're working. They're occupied.
Okay.
They're
Those
not,
are not
they're
two
not
things
being...
I wouldn't have put together.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Andrea, for opening my eyes. And now I think that my conversations might be better and different. Can you tell our listeners where to find your work and how to be in touch with you if they want to be?
My Substack is called How Project 2025 Will Ruin Your Life. The URL is project2025istheocracy.substack.com. So you can find me there 5 days a week. And I also have a website, andrewwatkins.com, my name. So you can find me there too.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. I feel like, I mean, frankly, and this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, but every time I talk to somebody more about Christian nationalism, I my eyes are opened in entirely different ways. And I'm sure my listeners know more about it than I do, but it's putting a lot of pieces together for me that
It's interesting already. Because for the longest time, I never talked about how I grew up because every time I tried, people looked at me like I was insane. And so it's interesting that at this moment, I can go back to all that and pull so much from it and help so many people. And people are receptive to it. I mean, they still think it sounds insane, but then they can look at what Christian nationalist Republicans are doing and go, well, but that is what they're doing. This isn't so crazy. I mean, it sounds crazy, but you're right.
Right.
So I'm grateful that I'm able to take an experience that really harmed me in a lot of ways and use it for something good and positive. And I hope that's what comes from this. And we win.
Right. Well, we're all in this together. And the more each of us does to help educate and motivate people around us in real life, the better on we will be. So thank you for coming on. And
thank you for having me.
Get to talk again soon.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Over Fascism. And thank you to our editor, Benji Wilson. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please drop us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. We thank you for choosing freedom over fascism.